He sheathed it, then added,
It's not too late to pledge loyalty to the Korax, and to your future king.
By now, my temper was boiling. Bow to a man whose leadership casts such an insignificant shadow? You insult the true king. His smile turned false.
The true king is whoever Trina names tonight. And if you try to stop us, you will lose.
The last I saw of him was a stern frown that he must have hoped would make me cower or beg for him to accept me. I kept my gaze at him steady, hoping he would see nothing in my expression. Because if he did, he would probably do worse than tie me to this post. My heart was in turmoil. Yet I was determined to keep fighting. This no longer had anything to do with the defeat of Lord Endrick. To save Antora, I had only one choice left. I had to stop the person meant to save Antora.
Chapter 46. Simon.
Simon!
My eyes fluttered at the sound of my name, though I wished I hadn't heard. My head pounded fiercely, worse than when the Dominion soldiers had treated my body like a kickball. What had happened? Through the fog that was currently serving as my memory, I vaguely recalled Tengger raising a rock. Was it to attack me, or protect me from an attack? Someone jostled my leg and called my name again. That was Kestra. Ow, I moaned. Really, you're kicking me? I'm sorry, Tengger. So it was him. But why? Your captain is protecting his choice for the blade. Risha's daughter. That thought took some time to process, but once it did, my breath caught in my throat. Tell me it's not. Trina. When she said she wanted to get the dagger for Tengger, she meant it literally. And if she becomes the Infidant, she'll put Tengger on the Scarlet Throne. That can't happen, Simon. Trina has to be stopped before that ceremony begins. Was someone playing drums with my head? It felt that way. You tried to touch the blade and it rejected you. Maybe the same thing will happen to her. I'm Endrian. She's Risha's daughter. Trina has a better chance than anyone in that crowd. I'd already been working at my knots, and so had Kestra, but neither of us were making any progress. I looked around for anything within reach that might cut the leather cord, but my sword was far out of reach, and we had the unfortunate luck of being in the cleanest cobbler's shop in all of Antora. That figured. Were there any tools left out on the workbench? I asked. Anything sharp? I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to the bench. I twisted my body around until I could fold my legs beneath me, and then hunched my back to bump the bench up in the air. It barely rose, but came down heavy enough that a few tools bumped with it. Nothing dropped to the floor. That wasn't fun. Something in my chest had just snapped, I was sure of it. Whatever Lowell had healed inside me was probably undone. Can you do it again? But keep it raised a little longer. Do you know how heavy this bench is? I'm not asking you to twirl it, just keep it raised for 3 seconds. I sighed. I'll give you 2. By then, Kestra had scooted her hands as low to the ground as possible. When I raised the bench, she needed to swipe the leather cord beneath the bench leg. 2 seconds. That was all I could do. I drew in a deep breath, raised my legs higher than before, then lifted the bench with my back. It barely came off the ground, and even then I struggled with the weight. I got the cord beneath the leg, but it's pinched there, she said. Higher! You do it then, I grunted. But with one last effort, I raised it just enough that she could pull the cord free. I let the bench drop and then leaned back against the table leg, exhausted. Somehow my head hurt worse than before. The pounding had become an incessant rhythm at the base of my skull. I figured if I slept again now, I might never wake up. Kestra stood and found a small round knife, one that might cut boot leather. She twisted it to the right angle behind her back to slice at the leather cord. Seconds later, she was free. She knelt beside me and freed my arms, but I didn't move. I can't go out there with you, I mumbled. I'll slow you down. Will you be all right? I don't want to leave. You have to stop them. I'll be fine. Just you be careful. She smiled and leaned in for a quick kiss, then stood again and ran out the door. She wasn't gone more than 5 seconds before I cursed and forced myself to stand. Of every girl in Entora, why did I have to be falling so hard for her? I could have found a nice farm girl who'd spent her days making meat pies and milking our cows. I could have even chosen a Korak, someone who'd fight beside me, not against me. Of anyone, why, Kestra? Once I stumbled outside, I started toward the amphitheater. The crowd there was growing, and I couldn't see Kestra anywhere. Down on the stage, Thorn was finishing up his explanation for the ceremony's procedure. It wasn't complicated. Anyone who wanted a chance to claim the dagger would be invited forward. They would introduce themselves to the audience, prove their blood as a Haldarian, and then Thorn would decide the order in which people could attempt to claim it.
"As you know, my friends, the Olden Blade has a will of its own," Thorn said. "I do not choose the Infidant, nor can the Infidant select himself. The Blade will reject or choose its master on its own, and we must all follow that choice into battle. If you cannot accept these terms, I ask you to remove yourself from this gathering."
Thorn waited, and I watched for anyone to leave, but no one did. They might later regret that decision if Trina became the Infidant. Thorn cleared his throat, then continued,
"Since the Haldarians have no living ruler, the first duty of the Infidant will be to select our king or queen. The heavens will honor their choice."
I fingered the sword at my side. Trina would choose Tengger as king. Was I prepared to attack my own captain? A man I still believed was the right person to lead the rebellion? I would have to if it came to that.
"All who wish to be tested, prepare yourselves!"
The audience cheered, and a couple of larger men in the audience loudly boasted that they would claim the dagger. I tried to spot Trina or Tengger, but couldn't see either of them. Wherever they were, I knew Trina would be biding her time. She believed she was the Infidant, and maybe she was. And where was Kestra? I couldn't see her either, and hoped she had avoided finding trouble in the few steps between the amphitheater and the cobbler's shop. Knowing her, that was unlikely. Murmurs began to spread in the audience as various people pointed out their candidates. Thorn waved his arms for silence, then continued,
"Tonight we raise our hopes in honor of the Infidant, and bend our knees to a ruler. Who will it be?"
Now I found Trina. She was seated in the front row with the wrapped blade on her lap, sitting as tall as if she were already the Infidant. She was skilled with the dagger and had great courage, even if it was sometimes misplaced. If she was successful tonight, I would have to honor that choice. Kestra would feel differently. Finally, Thorn said,
"This much is certain. Once the Olden Blade has chosen, it will light up, identifying the Infidant. At that point, there will be no doubt that we have Risha's successor and the person tasked with the responsibility of killing Lord Endrick. Before any candidates put yourselves forward, I ask you to consider the weight of what you must do. Holding the Olden Blade is no guarantee you will survive Lord Endrick or his cruelty. For all her courage and strength, Risha didn't. The blade will not keep you from hardships and trials. If anything, that dagger will bring them to you. You will take up the dagger, not to gain glory and honor for yourself, for you will likely receive neither. Despite all this, you must carry forward, for if you do not succeed, no one else will."
Thorn waited for his words to sink in before his command rang through the air.
"Bring forth the Olden Blade!"
On that cue, Trina finally emerged from the center of the crowd. Standing tall and proud, she walked onto the stage, holding the wrapped blade in sacred fashion. Sudden movement in the upper part of the audience caught my eye. Kestra, without her hood on. She was pushing forward to get to Trina, but it was too late. Yet I noticed the determined expression on her face. This wasn't over. Thorn set the wrapped blade on a small table, then gently unfolded the cloth. He crouched down to study the blade, his brow furrowing as he studied every detail of it. He stretched out a hand, letting it hover over the weapon, and closed his eyes as if attempting to feel any heat coming from it. When he was satisfied, Thorn stood and announced to the crowd,
"This is the Olden Blade!"
Trina stepped in front of him. "And I will claim it!" I immediately began pushing my way into the crowd. Trina could be allowed her chance at the dagger, along with the other candidates, but the Haldarians had to believe this was a fair process. They'd never join us otherwise.
"She has brought us the Olden Blade!"
Thorne's smile was forced and nervous, and anyone could detect the reluctance in his voice.
"This girl took the risk of bringing it here. We will give her the first chance to claim it."
I'd become lost in a crowd of Haldarians, pressing closer to the stage. For that reason, I only caught occasional glimpses of Trina, though I did hear her clearly announce,
"You should all know me. I was born in a Haldarian camp shortly before my mother's arrest, and grew up among some of you. My name is..."
"You are Trina!"
a woman shouted from the crowd.
"You were exiled from our people because of your Dominion father! He fought for Rendrick!"
"Your father betrayed us!"
a man shouted.
"How dare a traitor's daughter attempt to claim that dagger?"
Trina's voice rose in pitch.
"Because a traitor's wife first claimed it! Risha Haldarian is my mother! In her honor, I have trained as a warrior. I understand the Endrian's dark powers and strategies. I will kill Lord Endrick, the last of the Endrians."
Boos erupted from the audience, and someone threw a handful of rocks onto the stage. Trina dodged them and moved back, deeper onto the stage.
"You're a Korak," another man said. "You want to steal the throne that rightfully belongs to us."
"I am a proud Korak," Trina said. "I've risked my life fighting Lord Endrick while you all hid away in the safety of this place. But I have never forgotten my Haldarian blood."
"What of your Dominion blood?"
another person shouted.
"You can't be trusted any more than a Dalasaur."
"A Dalasaur is here tonight."
I followed the sound of Tengri's voice until I saw him in the audience with Kestra in his grip, her face pinched in anger. If Tengri tried something, I had no chance to get to her in time. A fine protector I was. Tengri pushed Kestra forward through the audience, many of whom were already murmuring Kestra's name. She wasn't fighting him, and kept a clear focus on Trina. I understood now. She had wanted to be captured. She wanted to be taken to that stage where she had access to Trina. But her plan was going to backfire.
"That girl is no Dalasaur!"
a woman yelled.
"I know the truth about her! This girl bears the blood of our enemy! She is Endrian!"
That clearly wasn't common knowledge. The initial uproar threatened to become a mob, with most people on their feet and directing their anger at either Kestra or Trina. She was standing tall, biting on one lip and looking around in case anyone tried to rush the stage. Tengri stared at Kestra, with his mouth hanging open, his face hardened with sudden coldness. Obviously, he had not known who Kestra was, but now that he knew, he must have been thinking of the Korak Oath regarding Endrians.
"Kill the Endrian!"
someone cried.
"No!"
Thorne stepped to the center of the stage, waving his arms and trying to get their attention.
"I tried to warn you 3 years ago. This girl will help us, as no one else can. We need her."
But his voice was drowned out in the anger of the crowd. Tengri put a knife to Kestra's throat, weighing the choice of whether to heed the crowd's wishes before the ceremony or after. Their chants rose in the air until it was all I could hear. "Kill the Endrian. Kill the Endrian."
Chapter 47. Kestra. It didn't matter how high I arched my neck. Tengri's blade dug in deeper with every move I made. His grip on my arm was so tight he had cut off any feeling there. I doubted he truly wanted to kill me, but he might if the Haldarians kept this up. For them, my very existence was an injustice that should have been corrected 3 years ago. If Tengri did as they wanted, he would cement the bond between these two groups. He knew that better than anyone. Thorne wasn't far away, but he couldn't help me now any more than he did 3 years ago. Besides, he had a bigger problem. Trina and the Olden Blade. She stood in front of the dagger, clearly furious at having the attention turned away from her. But she was going to change that.
"Wait, Captain," she said. "First, let me claim the Olden Blade. Then I'll take care of Kestra, proving my loyalty to the Haldarians."
Tengri's knife lightened against my throat, though he pushed me to my knees and pinched a hand onto my shoulder. If I'd known who you are, Endrian, you never would have made it this far, he muttered.
Well, this was a relief. Trina would kill me instead, immediately after claiming the blade, which she was unqualified to wield. At least I wouldn't have to be around to see the havoc she would wreak on my country. Antora was still my country, and I was amazed by the sudden realization that I wanted it to remain that way. Had I betrayed it? Or had my country betrayed me? Would I die here as an enemy of Antora, or a martyr for it? Above the continuing chance for my death, Thorn tried again.
My people, stop this madness! Kestra is our last hope. She...
No, I am your hope, Trina shouted. I am the daughter of Risha Haldarian, heir to the Olden Blade and your Infidant. This is my moment!
With Tanger's nod of approval, Trina returned her attention to the dagger. The unruly audience shifted their attention to her, eager to see her reach for it. Before she touched it, Thorn shouted, Wait! Trina froze, but did not lower her hand.
Why?
Something is wrong, he said. In the presence of so many Haldarians, the blade should have a faint glow about it, in anticipation of being claimed.
Now Trina pulled her hand away. This is the true Olden Blade. I swear it is.
I believe you, Thorn said to Trina. This fits the description of the Olden Blade, and its nicks and scratches match those that were on Risha's dagger when we last saw it. However, we are certain it should glow for the Infidant.
Tanger leaned forward, staring at the dagger as if silently commanding it to glow. I doubted he could stare hard enough for a blade of magic to care what he thought.
Maybe she broke it, I mumbled.
This girl is a fraud, a woman shouted. Trina Haldarian is not worthy of the Olden Blade.
No, she shouted. I am the Infidant. I will prove it to you.
She put her hand onto the dagger's handle, and although she pulled away at first, she gripped it again, and her face immediately twisted into a grimace. I knew exactly how much it was hurting her, but she refused to let go. It was a warning. Release the handle, or it would kill her.
This is mine, she shouted.
She tried to lift the dagger, to hold it aloft as a victor might do, but the dagger refused to move from its place on the table. I brushed my fingers across my palm. The burn had faded a little, but would never go away entirely. And now the blade was burning her, too. It was rejecting her. How could she not be the Infidant, I wondered, considering who her mother was.
Her traitor blood is killing her!
Someone called from the audience.
I cleaned this dagger!
Somehow still able to speak, Trina had fallen to her knees, and lines of pain were etched across her face.
I thought... I don't understand.
Simon leapt onto the stage and gave me only a passing glance before turning his attention to Trina.
Let go!
Behind me, Tanger said,
It might take time, Trina. Stay strong.
It's working! She cried. I will succeed here!
No. She would die here. Her face was becoming gray and the flesh sinking inward. Why wouldn't she just let go? One to fall. Back in the dungeons, we had believed the third line of the prophecy represented Endric, but that was wrong. It was speaking of Trina. If she didn't let go soon, she would die. The crowd was becoming more alarmed and furious that she was refusing to release a weapon that clearly had rejected her. Down in the audience, I saw more than one sword come out. Although, to be fair, those swords might have been for me. I was the enemy here, far more than she was. Simon grabbed Trina from behind, but she squirmed free, preventing him from getting control of the blade. He had to be careful, or the blade would hurt him too. I doubted his body could take much more punishment. Forgetting about me, Tanger dove into the fray between Simon and Trina. I immediately reached for a knife hidden against my thigh, one I'd stolen from a distracted man in the crowd before allowing Tanger to capture me. As soon as the knife was in my hand, I grabbed Tanger's good leg, stabbing him in the calf. When Tanger rolled away, his hand on the injury, Simon wrapped his arm around Trina's shoulders.
Drop the Oldenblade, he yelled. Trina, for your own sake, drop it, or I will stop you. If she had been any stronger, I was sure she would have kept hold of the blade. But by now, she couldn't help but release it. The instant she did, she fell to the ground, unconscious. The Oldenblade clattered to the stage floor. Simon was behind it, near Trina. Thorn was beside them, and Tanger was on the far edge of the stage. Slowly, I rose to my feet. The audience had gone entirely silent. None of us knew what to do next. One to vanquish. Trina and Tanger both believed those words had been carved into the dungeon wall by Risha, speaking about Trina. But they weren't. Suddenly, everything made sense. My mother, the last fugitive Endrian, who had betrayed Lord Endric and stolen the Oldenblade, had carved those words. Anaya had not been Risha Haldarian's servant. It was the other way around. My mother had claimed the Oldenblade. My mother had been the Infidant. And when she had carved those words into the walls, it was never about her. She knew her fate. What if she had described the one person she would have thought about endlessly in her final days? Her infant daughter. Me. This was impossible. Above the roar of the audience, Thorn whispered in my ear.
There's a reason the Oldenblade didn't glow before. It's already been claimed.
I tried to protest, but immediately felt uncomfortable beneath Thorn's steady gaze. It wasn't me. There was no glow when I touched it.
But you did touch it.
It burned my hand. It rejected me. Thorn took my hand, softly rubbing his thumb over the burn.
If the Oldenblade had rejected you, my lady, you'd be dead now. You claimed it.
No. I'm Endrian. My mother.
Yes, child. But who's your father?
In a rush, the answer came to me, filling me with instant warmth and understanding. And pain. Where Henry Dalasor had always resented me, threatened me, and tried to push me away, someone else had taught me, trained me, and kept me safe. Someone else had loved me as a father should, telling me exactly who he was without ever saying the words. Darrow, I whispered.
You have a Haldarian father, and an Endrian mother, who gave her life to steal the blade away from Lord Endric. Why do you think I tried to bring you here 3 years ago? The Infidant never could have been anyone but you.
I shook my head, still unsure of what to say. I don't want this.
But will you accept it?
Would I? Someone had to bring Lord Endric down. Someone had to end the Dominion's harsh reign over Antora. I'd lost so much already, just to get to this moment. What more would I lose before completing the heavy quest that lay ahead? Everything. Before this was over, I risked losing everything. But that didn't mean I could walk away, either. I looked down at my palm, squeezed a tight fist, and then walked forward to pick up the Oldenblade. I grabbed it with confidence. This time, it would not reject me. The blade itself lit up like a sun, so bright that it hurt my eyes. There was no sting, no burn, only warmth that passed from the blade into my arm, fusing itself into my very soul. Everything had gone silent around me. I was aware of that, although I couldn't see anything but the blade. My blade. The Oldenblade was mine. I had claimed it. With that awareness, I held the dagger high, clasping it with both hands. And I kept it there until the glow finally faded. Once it did, and my eyes adjusted so that I could see the townspeople again, I realized that every person in the area had risen to their feet, their right arms folded against their chest in my honor.
You are the Infidant,
Thorn whispered. One to vanquish, my mother had written. Not speaking of herself, for she would never return from the dungeons. Not speaking of Risha, who would go to the same doom. Not even Risha's daughter, no matter how much she desired this. Those were Anaya's words, carved into a dungeon wall,
beneath a home that bowed to Lord Endric himself. From the bowels of Antora's enemy would come the Infidant, destined to end the enemy's rule. She meant me.
Chapter 48. Simon. I couldn't believe what I'd just seen, or didn't want to. As the glow faded, Kestra lowered the Olden Blade. Her eyes remained determinedly forward, her jaw set square and strong in defiance. Yet I'd seen her look afraid before, and no matter how hard she tried to hide it, she was. The Haldarian stared back at her, equally uncertain. Moments ago, they had chanted for her death. Now, she was the one person who might save them, who might return their people to power. Her people. Just as Lord Endric and the Endrians were her people. Her own blood was about to go to war with itself. Thorn walked forward.
You know your first duty, my lady. The people would have you select our next ruler.
One to rule. Near me, Tengger was nursing his wounds. He glared fiercely at Kestra, but she didn't seem to notice. Trina was sprawled on the ground beside Tengger, unconscious. The surprise she'd have upon waking almost felt cruel. Kestra turned back to me. I'd become disheveled in the fight, with one missing boot, and with my tunic untucked and covering the handle of my sword. In response to her silent question, I shook my head, as serious as I'd ever been. With a curt nod, she faced forward again.
I will give my selection for the throne in my own time, she said.
Very well, my lady.
Thorn took her hand with the blade and raised it high, then called out,
My people, heed your Infidant, chosen to save the kingdom of Antora and restore the Haldarians to the Scarlet Throne.
The cheer that rose from the crowd was muted and cautious. Kestra might hold the blade, but they had not forgotten who she was. I started toward her, hoping that after the crowd settled I could speak with her, explain myself. But it was not to be. Thorn cut between us deliberately.
My lady, you must come with me. I have a safe place where you can spend the night.
A safe place? I asked. This was the man responsible for her kidnapping, and we were supposed to trust him now? If she's the Infidant...
She is while she lives, Thorn said. But my people will not trust an Endrian girl raised as a Dalasaur. Some will believe that if they kill her, they can obtain the Olden Blade for themselves.
He gestured to the audience, which was already murmuring her name, all of it unfriendly.
They will accept her in time, but not tonight.
Not ever. Kestra bit her lip, raising barricades around herself again. At least this time I understood. I couldn't imagine how it must feel to be given the quest of killing the last of your blood, to save a people who wanted you dead.
Wherever she goes, I go. I pushed toward her, but again Thorn held me back.
We will take care of her, he said. Kestra is no longer your responsibility.
And that was it. She didn't have the chance to say goodbye before she was whisked away, and then Tengger was at my side, ordering me to help get Trina to safety. I obeyed, but for Trina's sake, not the captain's. Even as I lifted Trina into my arms, my mind remained with Kestra, wondering what was happening to her. Holding on to Kestra felt like keeping a handful of smoke, almost impossible, but I had to try. In only 4 days, she had gone from being the spoiled daughter of my enemy to being the sole hope of a clan we were forced into trusting. Worse still, she had taken on the task of killing an immortal ruler. How could she possibly succeed? It was very early in the morning before I found her again. Kestra was saddling up a horse the Haldarians must have given her, a brown courser with a thick black mane and strong build. It would serve her well. Kestra was dressed differently now, with her hair washed and braided, and in much finer clothes than the rags she'd arrived in. She had riding breeches that fit her perfectly, worn with a thick and parted overskirt to keep her warm, with or without a cloak. It lacked the bright colors or patterns of the Dalasaurs, but the muted style seemed more in keeping with her sacred quest. A low-hanging belt on her waist provided a sheath for a simple sword on one side and the Olden Blade on the other.
I barely dared to greet her again. She was the same girl who had captured my heart and occupied my mind, and yet she was a sudden stranger. I didn't know what to do or say, or what to expect. She turned before I had to say anything, but her smile was cautious. "No bandage for your head?" "I'm fine." She parted my hair to see where Tengger had hit me with the rock, then lowered her hand, looking as awkward as I felt. "I was worried," she whispered. It wouldn't be anything compared to the way I was worried for her. How could I tell her that? Make her understand that I hadn't slept a minute last night, not knowing if she was safe? Kestra brushed a hand over her horse's mane. "His name is Shadow. He's the best they have." "Good." Talking to her was like swimming through mud. "Good, I suppose." She smiled. "The Haldarians are training tigers as replacements for their horses. They believe it's the best way to combat the Dominion's auropods in battle." That got my interest. Tigers? Seriously? They're hoping this latest breed doesn't try eating their riders. Again. I was offered one, but I told them I'd take a horse until they get the details worked out. My grin widened, then quickly faded. "Darrow would be proud of you, Kes." "Your father would be proud." Her eyes darted, though they were clearer now. "Why didn't he say something? He had hundreds of chances." I understood Darrow's reasons, though I doubted she ever would. If Darrow had told her the truth, he would have obligated her to become the Infidant. He was trying to save her from this. She shrugged away her sorrow, for now. "How is Trina?" "Tengger is taking her back to the Korax. We hope that Loel can prevent any permanent damage." "Trina wants to talk to you." "No, absolutely not."
"My lady."
Tengger had come up behind us, with Trina at his side. His calf was bandaged where Kestra had cut him last night. Trina's hands were bandaged too, and her face was ashen. But the biggest change about both was subtler. They seemed humbled. Kestra's eyes roved from Tengger to Trina without registering any particular expression on her face, and she remained silent. Tengger took a cautious step forward.
"If I had known who you were, who you are, I would have helped you claim the blade."
Would he? I wasn't sure, and Kestra still hadn't responded. Tengger continued.
"I won't apologize for how things happened last night, but I am sorry again about your father. It was never our intention that Darrow should die."
In all my time with the Korax, I'd never heard Tengger apologize for anything. He considered apologies a weakness, intolerable from a Korak. So if he was saying these things, then it was part of his calculation to get Kestra on his side, which he absolutely needed now. "But it was your intention to kill me." Kestra's tone was flat, as unemotional as her expression had been. "Both of you." "Not me," Trina said. "I asked Captain Tengger to let me do it because my plan was to spare you." Kestra didn't react to that, though I did believe Trina. If she had wanted to hurt Kestra, she'd had plenty of chances before last night. Finally, Tengger bowed his head to her silence.
"The Korax are at your service, my lady. We remain devoted to the cause of ending Lord Endrick's reign. Simon, if you ever want to come back, we will have you."
He gave me a meaningful look. Then he and Trina left. At least he had meant what he'd always said, that he would serve the Infidant no matter who it was. Kestra immediately turned to me. "What did he mean, if you want to come back?" I left the Korax. I kicked at the ground, a habit that was starting to wear holes in the toes of my boot. I can't continue to follow Tengger, not after last night. "What will you do now?" "Help you, of course." Her eyes softened. "That's not your role, Simon. We both know that." I shook my head in anticipation of her accusation. "Whatever you're thinking, last night, when you came onto the stage, your tunic covered the handle of your sword. It came untucked. Your wrapping around the sword's handle came loose, too. Your tunic covered it. Deliberately. Why did you cover it?" I didn't want to discuss this. Not now. Maybe not ever. I'm not... There are three people who are forever connected to the dungeons. All are referenced in the dungeon prophecy. One to vanquish. Reaching out, I tucked a loose strand of hair behind Kestra's ear. That's you, born into the dungeons. The third line, one to fall, was fulfilled by Trina last night when she failed to claim the Olden Blade. She lost her mother to the dungeons. And you were the first to escape them, she said. One to rule. Simon, that's you. Worry seeped into my chest. Don't choose me, Kes. I don't have to. You've already been chosen. I refused to look at her, but couldn't suppress the stiff rise and fall of my shoulders. She wasn't guessing. Somehow, she knew. She continued. The exiled ruler of the Haldarians was King Gareth. After you escaped from the dungeons, a man you called Gar took you in, even adopted you as his own son. Before his death, he gave you everything he had. His home, his sword. Her eyes met mine, perfectly calm, fully in control. His legacy. No, he didn't mean. His ring is in your satchel. Why else would I have traded away my mother's necklace for it? And that's why you have his sword, and why you hid it last night. Why don't you want the Haldarians to know he anointed you as king? I am no king, nor do I have a drop of Haldarian blood, and I am an infidant with the blood of their enemy. When I complete my quest against Lord Endrick, I will name you king. You have some time to get ready, but not much. I intend to complete this as soon as possible. Shaking off her threats to have me crowned, I stepped closer to her, cupping her cheek in my hand, and wishing it could remain there forever. How could she not understand how little I cared for the throne, and how much I cared for her? She leaned in to my touch, placing her own hand over mine. I said, "If you have a plan, let me help." "I want that," she whispered, and her other hand wrapped around the back of my neck. "It's all I want. But I have to go alone." My brows pressed together. "Go where?" "If it works, this won't be as hard as anyone thinks." I looked at her horse again, and then with a thud against my chest, I understood. I released her and backed away. "You're returning to the Dalasaurs? Tell me you're not." "Tengger was right. That's the only way to get close to Endrick. The last time you were close to him, he nearly killed you with a simple touch of his hand, and he inserted a tracker into your neck. But I know about that. Now, he has other powers. Powers you can't protect yourself from because you don't know what they are. And he doesn't know who I am. I can still get close to him." "And then what? That dagger will not protect you." "No, but my wits can. The last they saw of me was when you led me out of the dungeons with a knife at my neck. I'll tell them you took me to the rebel camp. A camp where you attacked their soldiers, none of whom lived to report what I did. They don't know I have the blade or that I've been here. I'll be admitted back to Woodcourt again." I huffed, feeling angrier than before. "Where you'll immediately be married off to that twit Sir Basil." "I won't. I'm going to defy Henry Dalasaur, disobey his command to marry, and refuse to speak to anyone about it, except Lord Endrick himself." I shook my head, wishing it were enough to make her understand how much she was risking. "No, Kes, don't do it this way. Even if you succeed, how would you escape Woodcourt again, all alone this time? I've been alone there for my whole life. At least I know the truth now, which will help me get through this, and if something goes wrong, I'll have no way of saving you." I lowered my voice, hoping she would hear the worry in it and at least pay attention to that. "I won't even know it's gone wrong until it's too late." She closed the remaining gap between us. "It wouldn't work. I wouldn't be distracted." "Then I'll have to make sure nothing goes wrong." Her fingers pushed through my hair and remained there, drawing me nearer to her. I was suddenly very much distracted. My eyes flitted down to her smiling mouth, and there was practically no air between us. "Please don't go. Not alone. Find me when this is over," she whispered. "Promise that you will find me." I leaned in and kissed her, letting the press of my hands on her back, the beat of my heart against hers,
speak the words I lacked the courage to say. The second touch of our lips was deeper, so that I almost believed our souls had connected. Her kiss emptied me of all thoughts, but a wish for the world around us to stop turning, for a miracle to let this moment last forever, or even for a single minute. Couldn't I have just one more minute with her in my arms? Because she was already fading away, and I couldn't hold her tight enough to change the inevitable. Our final kiss ended too soon. Like a song cut off mid-note, a breath drawn in but not released. It was a start without a finish. But I would finish it. Soon. We parted with reluctance, and I whispered, "Come back soon. I am a protector with no one to protect." "I'm going to save Antora," she said. "And then you will rule it, only if you are at my side." I handed her the horse's reins. "I will see you again soon, and think of her unceasingly until then." She climbed into Shadow's saddle, patted his neck, and said, "I will return, Simon." Kestra rode away so suddenly that she couldn't have heard my final words. "No, my lady. I will follow."
This is Jesse Valinsky. We hope that you have enjoyed this production of The Traitor's Game, Book 1, by Jennifer A. Nielsen, read by Jesse Valinsky and Michael Corin Dorsano. Please keep listening for an exclusive bonus story, Dagger and Dusk, by Jennifer A. Nielsen, at the end of this recording. This program was produced at Dion Audio Services and directed by Sebastian Zetten. Executive producer Paul R. Gagne. Text copyright 2018 by Jennifer A. Nielsen. Production copyright 2018 by Scholastic Inc. All rights reserved. Look for other titles by Jennifer A. Nielsen from Scholastic Audio. Dagger and Dusk. Anaya clenched her nails tightly into her palms, letting their sharp ends fuel her concentration. She understood the reasons her friend Risha Haldarian was going so slow, but Risha didn't seem aware of how desperate the situation was. Anaya's magic was quickly failing her. Once it did, she'd have no way of masking their presence here in Lord Endrick's chambers. He'd find them and kill without mercy. He'd win. Tonight was supposed to end the very opposite way. It had to end with Endrick's death, or Antora would surely fall into darkness. This was probably their last chance. After months of using her magic to hide from Lord Endrick, Anaya was beyond exhausted, resting nowhere for more than a few nights at a time, trusting the fewest people possible with her identity as an Endrian, because almost no one trusted her, and waking up each day further depleted of her powers. Being here tonight was only accelerating the damage. A shiver ran up Anaya's spine. The chill in here certainly wasn't helping. The entire palace had been cold, but here, in Lord Endrick's chambers, the bitter chill made it hard to think. She had to concentrate. She had to protect Risha. "Stay focused," Anaya whispered to herself. Then something deeper within her replied. "Stay alive." Yes, that too. 3 months ago, that wouldn't have been the priority. She'd have gladly given her life if that was the necessary price to kill Lord Endrick. Anything to stop the spread of his power, his shadow growing heavier upon the land with each passing day. But things had changed now. Anaya absently brushed a hand over her belly, thinking of her yet unborn child. Risha's daughter Trina was less than a year old. They were both mothers now. Stay alive. Risha hadn't wanted Anaya to come. She had insisted she could find her own way into the palace, but Anaya knew how impossible that would be. Endrick was no fool.
he'd expect them to come sooner or later. He'd be ready. The first part of their plan had gone well. They were here, inside Endrick's chambers, and thanks to a sleeping draft provided by Gerald, their spy in the palace, Endrick seemed to be in a deep sleep. His chambers were large enough to fit an entire company of soldiers, but nearly empty. 4 stone pillars stood in each corner of the room. An addressing podium was in the far corner. A window was at the far end of the room, but it was covered in heavy draperies and probably never opened. Instead, only a few sconces on the walls provided scant candlelight. Such as it was, Endrick's bed was a stone slab in the center of the room, balanced upon stacked rocks, the Endrian tradition. He was laid out upon it now. Though even asleep, he looked ready for battle. Fully dressed and armed, his body was perfectly straight, except for his hand on the hilt of the olden blade at his side. That would be a problem. A sound out in the corridor caught Anaya's attention. Soldiers passing by on their rounds, she guessed, based on their heavy, regular footsteps. For a brief moment, Anaya's concentration lagged, and Risha's cloak faded. Endrick murmured something, even in his sleep, aware of a disturbance in the room. Anaya immediately focused her powers again, though it caused her head to swirl with dizziness. She couldn't allow another lapse. It was too hard to pull everything back together again. Still subconsciously aware of another presence in the room, Endrick rolled from his position, mumbling as he did. It wasn't enough magic. Anaya wasn't doing enough. Her eyes snapped open, a new energy surging through her. Risha froze in place and glanced back in a sudden panic. But it was all right. They were cloaked again. That effort had cost Anaya dearly, and her body was trembling. She hadn't realized it would be so difficult to extend her powers to someone else. Anaya shook her head and motioned for Risha to continue, and to hurry. At least this time when Endrick moved, his hand had left the olden blade. This was their chance. Risha reached the edge of Endrick's stone slab. She positioned her body so that in the same motion of withdrawing the blade, she should be able to plunge it into Endrick's chest. She'd have to be fast. Anaya's powers could keep Endrick from detecting their presence, but he'd feel the motion of the blade at his side. The sleeping draft might dull his senses, but only by a second or two. That would have to be enough. It wouldn't be enough. If they failed, Anaya imagined how Endrick would laugh as he towered over her, to discover that after hunting her throughout the land, she had walked straight into his stronghold. He'd gloat over his victory even as he tortured her. Even as he killed her, Risha would be next. Not if they got him first. Risha put her hand on the hilt of the olden blade and began to wrap her fingers around it. Then she lurched back as if in sudden pain, clutching her hand to her chest. She turned back to Anaya, eyes widened, then showed her the palm of her hand, scorched red. Anaya silently cursed. With every murder of his own people, Endrick had taken their powers to himself. Somewhere in those deaths, he had acquired the ability to curse objects. Risha would not be able to hold the sword. But perhaps, with her shared Endrian blood, Anaya might have a chance at it. She would have to be the one to kill Endrick after all. If she succeeded, it would end this devastating war, cripple the Dalasaur stronghold on the land, and save thousands of lives. If she succeeded. Anaya crept out from the pillar, her fingers numb with cold and so weak by now that she was surprised to realize she had been leaning heavily on the pillar to keep herself upright. I will not collapse here, she thought. We have not come this far to fail now. Risha met her halfway, holding out her hands to support Anaya as she crept forward. It wasn't only her failing magic. With every step toward Endrick, Anaya increasingly felt his magic, his evil. She felt the souls of those he had already killed, crying out for her to survive, to bring justice to their deaths. Mostly, Anaya felt small. The ability to mask her presence was a powerful gift, but it was nothing compared to all that Endrick could do.
magic was as dangerous as it was wonderful. The greater a person's powers for good, the greater the tug on them to use it for evil. Many Endrians had turned before their deaths. Far too many. Anaya suddenly stopped walking, pressing against her side, sensing the child's discomfort. They had to hold on for only a few minutes more, both of them. And Anaya had to finish the job. Whether tonight's plan succeeded or failed, she would be too weak for some time to regenerate her powers. She would be vulnerable. Her child would be utterly defenseless. At last, Anaya was standing before Endric's sleeping body. The olden blade at his side seemed to call to her, tempting her with its power. If she were to wield a blade full of so much magic, if she succeeded in killing Endric, then would she possess the magic of all Endrians, too? Would she claim the Scarlet Throne, just as he had done, and rule the way Entor should be led? As weak as she felt now, Anaya couldn't force such dangerous thoughts from her mind. Or maybe she didn't want to. She reached for the blade's handle. And at the very same moment, Endric's hand snapped up from the stone slab. He grabbed her wrist, fully awake, and twisted her arm until she fell to the floor. Anaya tried to kick herself free of his grip, but only toppled a few rocks instead, one which hit her head hard enough to make the room blur. "If you had come alone, I might never have sensed you," he snarled. "But you brought your servant, too." Anaya mumbled, "My servant was only following orders. I'm the one you want, not her." "It won't be that easy, I'm afraid." Endric thrust a hand toward Risha, who immediately fell to her knees. He gave a casual glance back at Anaya, who was still on the ground, fighting to stay conscious. "I'll make quick work of your servant. Then, take what I want from you." Anaya rolled to her side and tried to push herself up, but couldn't. Maybe there was no point in fighting for survival. She was more dead than alive now anyway, and her magic was sputtering out its last fragments of power. But it would be enough for him to take. Then he would have everything, and no one left to challenge him. Endric had already turned his attention to Risha. He was behind her now, his hand on her neck, and whatever he did caused her to cry out with pain. "You're Haldarian," he asked her. "Killing you here is merciful compared to what I'll do to those who continue to fight me. When will the Haldarian surrender?"
"Not until the last Dalasaur falls," she said, ending with another scream.
"The Dalasaur serve me now," he said. "And I will win this war."
Risha's cry was cut off by Endric's own pained grunt, followed by his body crumpling to the floor. Behind him, Anaya stood with one of the rocks from beneath the stone slab, though she immediately dropped it, fighting to keep herself upright. If magic didn't work, brute force certainly was a fair replacement.
"I'm trapped!" Risha called out.
Sure enough, Endric had fallen directly over Risha's legs, and though she was struggling, his torture had clearly weakened her. Anaya stared at Endric's still body. He wasn't dead. Only the Olden Blade could do that.
"My lord?"
Someone knocked urgently on Endric's door.
"We heard noises. Is everything all right?"
"Finish the quest," Risha whispered.
Anaya stumbled forward, barely able to walk. The blade's hilt was near her, but he was laying on the weapon itself. Anaya crouched down and unlatched it from the sheath, but couldn't pull it free.
"Lord Endric, are you hurt?"
the voice on the other side of the door called, then added to others who must have been with him.
"Call for assistance."
While Risha worked to free herself, Anaya grabbed the handle, hoping it wouldn't burn her too. Fierce heat immediately spread from her palm throughout her body, but she could manage that. She only needed to use the blade this once.
"We have to hide."
Risha finally pried herself from beneath Endric's legs, then tugged at Anaya's arm.
"There's no time."
"Not yet." Anaya tugged again at the blade.
"Help me."
"Forgive us, my lord, but we're coming in,"
the servant called through the door.
"Now."
Risha pulled at Anaya, who kept the handle firmly in her hand. Their combined motion was enough to take the blade, which Anaya pulled to her chest, where it would best be cloaked. In the same instant, the door opened, letting in a glare of light. Anaya summoned the last of her magic to shield her and Risha as they were surrounded by 10 armed soldiers. Her breath came in short, pained bursts. There was so little left. There was so little of her left. Anaya felt the room fading around her.
"He's injured!" a young soldier exclaimed. "Find whoever has done this," another said. "Send for Sir Henry."
A third man, who appeared to be the captain, pointed to the empty sheath at Endric's side.
"The Oldenblade has been stolen."
A heavy silence entered the room, broken only when the captain added,
"Help me carry him to a surgeon. Then hope when he awakens, he doesn't order all of us to be hanged for this."
The soldiers obeyed, carrying Endric's body from the room. The last thing Anaya heard was the younger soldier saying,
"But we..."
Then she drifted into unconsciousness. There was no more strength for magic, for the beat of her heart. She had the vague sense of someone pulling her through an open window, dragging her near lifeless body away from the palace. Sometime later, maybe hours, maybe days later, she awoke in a dark forest on a canopy of leaves. Risha immediately rushed to her side, pressing a cup to her lips.
"Drink this."
It was warm and sweet, and Anaya felt the infant squirm within her. She pressed a hand to her belly and finished the rest of the drink.
"I wasn't sure if you would make it," Risha said.
Anaya still wasn't sure. She was worse than Risha probably knew. The magic within her was little more than cool embers, barely enough to feel, and certainly not enough to wield ever again. They would have little protection from Endric when he came for her. And he would come. Anaya had the Oldenblade. Without it, Endric was vulnerable.
"I'll take you to my people to recover," Risha said. "But we must make them believe that you're my servant. If they knew I served an Endrian, they'd never let us in."
"Agreed." Anaya's eyelids were heavy, wanting to close again.
"Then when you're stronger, we'll use the blade. We'll find Endric."
"It won't be me," Anaya said.
"You must do it."
Risha's eyes widened.
"Me? I can't even touch it."
Anaya nodded.
"I'm going to put the last of my magic into this blade." "No, that's what Endric wants."
Anaya shook her head. "I'm going to put the last of my magic into this blade, so that some piece of it will be mine. Then, if I give it to you, as my servant, as my heir, you should be able to wield it."
"The heir should be your child,"
Risha whispered.
"No, I don't want that for my daughter."
In her heart, Anaya knew it would be a daughter. The child would have enough difficulties as a half-Endrian. Anaya would not add to that burden the task of killing Lord Endric. Before the night was over, Anaya had emptied her magic into the Oldenblade, and only knew she had succeeded the next morning when she saw it already in Risha's hands.
"It burned me at first," Risha said, showing Anaya a mark on her palm. "But it's accepted me now."
"Then you will become known as the Infidant," Anaya said, smiling. "In my language, it means you are the one who wields. From this moment forward, your only task is to use it to kill Lord Endric. Nothing else matters."
"My daughter," Risha said, lowering the blade.
"Succeed, and Trina will never have to know evil the way we do," Anaya said. "Fail, and a new Infidant will have to do what we could not." Risha held out a hand to Anaya.
"If you're well enough to travel, let's go to my people. I'll show them the Oldenblade and tell them we finally have a way to end this war for good."
Anaya smiled and accepted Risha's hand. But deep inside, something stirred within her. A warning, perhaps. Risha was the Infidant, for now, but it wouldn't last. In the deepest part of her heart, Anaya knew the task of killing Lord Endric would fall to her daughter. But how could the child possibly succeed? Anaya closed her eyes for one final rest, a smile lingering on her face. Darrow.